Conversation Podcast. Join us from inside the design studios for conversations about presentation design, strategies, tips and tricks, running a design studio, and more, all for presentation designers, managers, and presenters. Here are your hosts, Troy Collar, Nolan Hames, and Sandra Johnson.
Hi, I'm Troy Collar from TLC Creative Services based in Southern California.
Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. I'm Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
And I'm Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative in sunny Montclair, New Jersey.
Wow, it is actually overcast here in Southern California, San Diego, which is a little bit unusual. It'll be gone in an hour or two. But hey, we're recording early morning. So sunny Montclair, New Jersey and Midwest woman, what's happening in your design studios this week?
Well, let's see. I recently presented my PowerPoint Audiences Are People 2 presentation to the Central Region MVPs. It was a webinar. That was fun to do. It was, you know, a lot of techie geeks out there. They all need to present ideas to pitch their ideas. And so I was helping them with that.
Nice.
Very cool.
Yep. How long of a talk was that?
Oh, it was about 40 minutes, okay. I guess. Yeah, it went really well.
Nice.
I'm also concepting storytelling themes for a client, and by themes in this case, I'm not talking PowerPoint themes. This particular client wants a theme that will help explain their complex product. Mm-hmm. Typically, I consider themes kind of, they can be kitschy, so I am treading very lightly on this one. It's a challenging project for me, and I'm looking forward to seeing how it turns out. How about you, Nolan?
I'm in the middle of two travel weeks. So last week I was on the road in Chicago and Detroit, training two offices of one agency. I'm home this week. And then next week I go to LA and San Francisco to train two more offices for the same client. So it's a lot of travel, you know, even though it's just 2 days each of the week, the whole week is kind of shot with travel days and not being able to, you know, just not being able to get that flight out of O'Hare, you know, later than 7, you're like, oh, am I going to make it if I leave at 5:30?
Oh
no, not going to happen. So then I get stuck in Chicago for another day, which is not the worst thing in the world.
No, it's not. I was just there. It was really fun.
What are you doing, Troy?
I just had a great little news item. What's happening is that I was actually up in Toronto working with a company, and MVP Dave Peretti drove down. He lives within about 30, 40 minutes of where I was at. He said, I'll come on down. We went out and had a great dinner together. It was very nice to get together and nice. Just catch up and talk. So that was kind of very, very cool and exciting. I guess what's happening on the design side is the reason I was up there is, you know, auto dealer meetings are always great events for presentation design because it's, well, they're just great projects that push the technology limits of presentation software. They provide a lot of wonderful design challenges, and they are wonderful in the good way. It's like, hey, how can I do this? And I've got this to work with. You know, it's not like I have one flat screen. In this case, I have this massive LED wall. It's, you know, a little over 8K wide. It's more pixel count tall than a standard aspect ratio, than standard 8K. So that makes it a little challenging. Presentation output is actually integrated with this massive amount of other technology. We have other screens. We have we're using pips within it. We have a 3D hologram screen in front of it. I mean, it's just, you know, it's keeping a large part of our team busy right now. And it was cool because I happened to be able to have dinner with Dave Peretti because he was generous to drive down and say hi.
He's so great about that. Echo and I were able to meet him in Chicago. Thus,
that's awesome.
The infamous recording from the bathroom.
Oh yeah.
All right, we've got some news. We've got some Microsoft news about Insider Fast. Troy, do you want to take that one?
Well,
I can.
No, you take it.
I'm not sure what we're talking about.
Okay, right. So not too long ago, Microsoft introduced 3D capabilities into PowerPoint.
I know what we're talking about.
And when they first released it, we could insert files from our desk, our computers. We could always access a website called 3D Remix, I believe it is. Now they've added the capability to insert online. So that
which
means
is super helpful.
Yes, it's direct access then to Remix files.
Yeah,
it's
it
really
wasn't
nice.
Really intuitive, or I should say, it is not really intuitive how to save files from remix to your computer, and now you don't have to. It just kind of does
right.
Yeah, I know exactly what we're talking about. Sorry, I was catching up. That's a good one, though. That's really helpful, and that's actually becoming, although it's a lot of cartoony content, it's really cool for experimenting. I've been using, I've been working with different file formats on some of the stuff I've been gleaning from this from these auto things, because it's really cool. They have the entire cars now are 3D rendered down to any part you want. So I guess if you're like in parts and service and you want to know what that bolt looks like, you literally pull it up and you have a 3D image of that. I mean, like realistic. In my case, I can have the whole car, any of the wheels, you know, everything done in 3D models. So I've been playing with them. I've pretty much broken PowerPoint a few times because it can't handle the complexity of these files. But
you know, that was a question about the 3D. How is it going to handle? Because we all know PowerPoint, you know, can choke on some big video files and other things like that. So I guess the answer is you're having some trouble with the larger
files. Yeah, but there's so many. I mean, these are really, really robust 3D models. They have lighting angles. They have layer upon layer of textures. So if I'm doing an external skin of a car, so in other words, like a photo of a car, it's handled that pretty good. Where I had some problems is some of the interiors where it shows like the whole dashboard and I was trying to zoom in and use Morph to make a zoom in effect. There are so many components in those models. I think it's like when you put in an Excel file with, you know, 3 million cells, it just chokes on trying to process the data, even though you're only looking at, you know, 4,000 of those, you know, several million. It's just one of those things where it's all the back end data. So it's I'm not using it in a real scenario. For this meeting is actually done entirely in Keynote for my portion. So I'm just opening up the files and using PowerPoint as an experiment.
But, you know, though, I'd like to add that the presentation summit is coming up in September. The very always helpful help desk will be running at least a couple of computers that have Windows, what is it, Windows Pro or Windows Creator, along with the 3D option. So InsiderFast will be running, and so that's a place if anyone wants to get help on 3D.
Hey, so speaking of the presentation summit, I got this great email, and I think everybody attending got it the same thing. It's from Poll Everywhere, which I've used for several years. Their ARS, Audience Response System, integrates into PowerPoint really well. Use your phone as the entry point. But, you know, so I've used it a lot. They're offering all attendees of the Presentation Summit a one-year subscription, which is another obvious perk of attending the summit. Did you guys get the same thing?
I did not get it, actually.
I did not. I'll have to figure that one out.
I will either need to cut this out or verify that because it was said as an attendee. It was very cool. Now, you know what's funny? This year, I am listed as an attendee. I'm not a presenting staff person.
Maybe that's why.
So maybe I'll contact them on your behalf. Okay, anyways, Poll Everywhere, they're going to be there. I do endorse them. I've used them in many places, in many scenarios. It's pretty robust stuff. And apparently, if you're an attendee, you're getting a free subscription, which is a nice thing to have. Even though I use all client subscriptions, it's nice to sometimes have a subscription to show. Well, you can do one
testing
or two questions.
Yeah,
it's nice just to show a client what the possibilities are or to pre-build them and have, you know, anyways, it's just a cool thing coming
up. Well, speaking of the summit, Logitech is going to be one of the vendors there. They make the presenters, the clickers. I use a Logitech. I've used it for years. They're coming out, or they have come out, and I'm not exactly sure when it came out. I kind of missed it, but fairly recently they came out with a new presenter clicker called Logitech Spotlight Presenter. And they sent me a demo, which I've been playing with, and I'm going to withhold judgment. I'm going to use it next week on the road, and then I'll let you know what it is. But
ordered it a while ago.
You did?
Rick Bretschneider wrote a blog on it.
Did.
Yes, well, it's a beautiful tool. It's just gorgeous.
Isn't this the one we had a really funny tech tips later and you couldn't remember the name of it? Is this the one you were talking about?
That's
right?
Exactly.
Okay,
really?
That's a couple episodes ago. It clicks. I got it.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, I'll wrap up news with this because I know we got a great topic. I'm pretty excited about this. Sandy, you get to just hopefully cheer in the background. But I just did yesterday my first annual renewal to the Presentation Guild membership. I'm very excited. I mean, I got the notice like, really? So it means the guild has officially existed for a full year. And I'm, you know, just, you know, I'll be more excited when I say, hey, I've renewed for my fifth year, my 10th year. But hey, it's a reality. It's a big thing. And
I renewed as well.
Thank you, guys.
Sandy, did you renew?
And I got the little message saying, if you have any problems renewing, email Sandy.
Did you have any problems?
Or talk to her on the podcast, actually, in my email.
There you go.
But no, I had no problems. Thank you.
Nothing at all. It ran very smooth. Actually, I did have a problem, but that was because I had to call Lori and remember which credit card we used. Presentation projects that allow us to be designers are what we are in business for. The process is more than just design. It's balancing the message, the visuals, the tone, and the audience focus to create a well-crafted speaker support presentation. But the reality is, getting from a client request to a deliverable presentation that everybody goes, that looks great, involves a lot of communication, coordination, all that office, I'll put air quotes, paperwork, and finally, we get to the design aspect. I found it really enlightening and fairly reassuring that when comparing notes, we each have very similar processes for setting up project items and information to request from our client. I'm sure many of the presentation designers joining this conversation will have a similar pre-project steps and processes. And for the presenters, producers, trainers, everyone else joining us, hopefully our conversation shows a bit of the rationale for many of the pre-project requests that we go through. So thanks to all for joining us today.
All right. I always say good designers ask lots of questions, sometimes too many from the client perspective. Sometimes it annoys them, but trust me, there's a reason we ask so much in advance. It's going to help you, certainly going to help us. Most of the time, the answers to the questions don't fundamentally change how we approach the project, but even if they don't, it helps us sort of at every stage.
I totally agree. And yes, the client's side definitely tend to be frazzled or annoyed, but hopefully this will shed some light on it. Mm-hmm. So let's go with this. What is the very first question you ask when a client says, can you design me a presentation?
I'm going to start. That's tough to answer this question. I guess it depends every single time. I ask a whole slew of questions, sometimes more informally than others, but all are driven by my presentation creative blueprint. And there's a link in the notes if anyone
this
cares
is really
to access.
Awesome. The fact that you're sharing it, everybody should go to the show notes and find this link. It is
it's a start. Now. You know what? Customize it.
It's such an amount of thought. I mean, I got a chance to look at it. Huh. And it's pretty just having the thought processes of somebody else, of another designer. Even I found it. I'm like, oh, that's a great idea. So the fact that Sandy starts with her presentation creative blueprint and she's sharing it with us, there, podcast done.
Yeah, there you go.
This is fantastic. I'm looking at it now. I love this.
Oh, you're very kind. Feel free to tweak it. And if anyone out there has suggestions, actually, there's a colleague on the guild, TJ Coptis, and I apologize if I mispronounce his last name. I know he's listening. He listens to all of ours. He should write a book. He has an awesome document that he has created and has shared it on the guild. Very, very comprehensive, but guild members can access that.
Hi, TJ. TJ and I are supposed to have coffee, and I keep postponing it because of life events, but I think we're going to do it next month.
Cool. Well, anyway, so I really just sit down. The first question statement I make is, tell me about your needs. And from there, I generate the questions.
So my question, which is on yours, your very detailed worksheet, is simply, who's the audience, basically, and how are you presenting? Specifically for me, that's on screen or print. Because that's going to define for me the biggest decision, whether we're creating an on-screen presentation with less words or basically a print document. And again, it's one of those things, if somebody's working in PowerPoint, they think a presentation is a presentation. But to me, that's the biggest dividing line in the forest. Sure. Which path are we going to go down?
We should talk about that more because I actually go, what type of screen? But,
that would be the next thing. Yeah.
So all these are great. Internally, I kind of have a first question that I generally don't verbalize, but it's, is this an established client? Can we move forward quickly, without a lot of the business talk, rates, contracts, points of contact, et cetera? Or is it a new client, which is always great to have, but it does require a lot of conversation outside of the design objectives just to make sure we're going to work together. So I kind of have this internal, okay, what's the scenario here? And can I dive right into this? Or do we have to kind of go this other thing? So.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. My internal question is this trouble? Yes. I mean, that's right. That would be the first thing. And then if you pass that test, then we can ask what kind of screen you're working on. All right. So then the first question on the practical side for me is what presentation software and what version are you using? Yeah. Now, usually we're talking about PowerPoint, of course, but not always. I just did a keynote and a Google Doc job in the past month. And I think, and as we've seen, versioning of PowerPoint is becoming a little more important these days with various features. You know, if I'm talking to a client and I see an opportunity for Morph and, you know, some other things, I'm immediately going to find out, you know, before we start going down this path and before I start promising things, tell me what, you know, what version you have to see if that's going to work.
Exactly. Sometimes I might wait too long to ask that question. How frustrating is it? You spend 45 minutes on the telephone talking about a project and then you find out it's a keynote. I personally wouldn't be developing a keynote. I would reach out to someone like you two for that.
Yeah. And I think sometimes you can get a sense, not always, of, you know, where people are going. You know, if it's a small little startup, you know, Silicon Valley-ish, you know, they probably want Keynote or Google Docs. So that's definitely something to get out, you know,
definitely
right away.
Definitely. I often ask, is this a presentation that's going to be given internally? How often do you think it'll ever be given externally? Is this an upcoming event? All trying to determine what my limitations are going to be with whatever version of PowerPoint they have.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, all the same stuff for me, you know, what software, what version. And then I further break it down into, because I always get concerned when it's going to be a live speaking event or a webinar, is you know, what computer and what version is it going to be presented on? Because sometimes, or I should say many times, I found that we design at one level, but then it's being used at a different scenario. And this is mainly PowerPoint and, again, versioning. But I'm thinking kind of more specifically is in videos. If we're doing embedded videos, is that computer going to be running is it going to be running Windows 10 so that I know that MP4 videos play, or is it going to be a more of a legacy Windows 7 computer? So I need to make sure it has either QuickTime installed or I revert to a WMV video format. So, you know, all those factors can really, you want to know them up front, because otherwise you just end up recreating stuff later. Often, you know, how do I want to phrase this? It's the questions right now are a lot of times us on the design side helping the client think through the process. I just got back from Canada. Through the process, beyond the design into how it's going to be used. So, you know, we're kind of helping guide the big picture or the long-term scenario. And it's a lot of times questions that aren't really thought of until too late.
Yeah, that's a good point. Sometimes you are helping the client answer these questions because most of the time they haven't even thought of them.
Yeah. And it shouldn't be their first thought. That's what we're there for, to make sure it gets thought of and taken care of.
So what about timing? Sort of, you know, when is the presentation date? I mean, isn't that the big thing? And, you know, the question under there really is what's the timeline that we're talking about here?
You know, the underlying, I think, is what's the reality in that timeline? You know, and then I follow up with details that we need to discuss. If the timeline, I get really concerned when it's excessively fast or excessively extended, because one of the two or either one of those can just create a lot of problems, because you either need to make sure you have everybody's focus, or in the extended ones, you need to make sure you can keep everybody's focus to keep it moving forward.
Yeah, it should be asked up front. I don't want to waste somebody's time on the phone call and at the end find out that it's due in 2 days. Although that did recently happen to me. It was a motivational speaker and he motivated me. I got it done in 2 days.
didn't motivate himself, but
yeah, good point. Good point. Yep.
Did you charge him more?
I did.
Good.
I learned from the Nolan School of hourly billing.
No, Nolan's school of your lack of planning doesn't necessitate an emergency on my part.
Exactly. It was a fun project.
Well, you know, I'm gonna throw this in there. We also subscribe to the same billing theory, but we just finished, and I'm gonna say we, as in I take credit for the fact that TLC did a great job, but it was really all Lori. Large corporate board of directors meeting, and there was a lot of pre-planning, but the messaging changed very dramatically weeks, days, hours before the meeting. So we were doing a lot of our weekend and after hours billing to get it all done. I mean, the meeting went great to my knowledge. Everybody's excited. But you know, we designed 300-400 slides for a 40 slide deck because the message kept changing. So, you know, we did that. We get those. It became a last minute call, even though it was a project we were already working on. Then it became, we got to revise this.
Just so you know, I do have a heart. I'm doing two projects this week for longtime clients. I'm not charging them rush, even though it's a quick turnaround.
No,
they're small and we can do it.
So. Yeah, but these quick turns were, hey, it's 6 p.m. at night and here's all the new stuff. Could we have it for our 7 a.m. review meeting?
That's like, exactly it. Exactly.
Yeah. You know, I always ask to make a point if there are other internal deadlines, because those always seem to pop up, right? They'll say, oh, well, I'd like it back from you. You know, or we need to present on, you know, give it to the, you know, the CEO on, you know, whenever. But then what they don't tell you is, well, their manager needs to see it next week. And you always get, you know, always get hit. I hate getting hit with that. It's like, you tell, you know what the timeline is, you know, you can deliver in a week. And then 2 days later, they're like, hey, can we see where you are? I need to show it to somebody. It's like, no. I mean, if you did, and it just gets uncomfortable.
We do the milestone discussion. What milestones along the way to this end deadline do we need? Yeah. So it's looking for those exact same things.
So I had a call last week with a client, new client, and they wanted something very rushed, you know, a lot of red flags going up, and went back and forth for a couple of days. And then we had this call and they said, okay, you know, we agree to your prices and the limitations and everything. And they said, but the timing has changed. And I said, okay, great. So instead of it being due the end of August, they said, well, I should just point out on the call, they said, okay, the timing's changed. It's now due October 27th. And I'm thinking, oh, fantastic. Great. We got plenty of time. No problem. You know, all those, everything we talked about. So we went on for like 20 minutes. And then at the end, I said, okay, so, you know, since this isn't due for a while, do you want us to get started right away or give you a little more time with the content? You know, we can start in a couple of weeks. And he said, well, it's due next week. I said, you said October 27th. And they said, oh, no, I'm sorry. I meant August 27th.
Oh, little slip.
Right. So I said, okay, so let's have the call again because
do-over.
Everything we just talked about is changed. So we had the call again we're doing it for them.
Okay, so in addition to design topics, and we've kind of hinted this, I always want to get some of the details of the project technical side out of the way. More about the presentation itself, in many cases, you know, aspect ratio of the screens or the computers we're going to be using. The delivery method, like you were saying, Nolan, is it going to be a live stage presentation? Is it going to be web? Is it going to be a PDF? Is it going to be, you know, printed? Things like that. So I always try and get those questions up front again, just so I kind of can gear the design questions. Because, you know, if it's going to be a print piece, I'm not going to suddenly worry about a lot of sizing issues or cutting content down as much. And, you know, content management maybe would be a better way to say that. You know, so it's going to all change, you guys?
Yeah. I mean, if we're doing a large formal presentation, I always like to talk with the AV people. Mm-hmm. You know, just because the client says widescreen doesn't mean it's going to be 16:9. You know, it could be anything. And very often they just don't have the answers to those questions. You know, but, you know, pairing that with timing too, you know, if they're doing a conference deck, I always ask, when does the conference need it? Because very often they'll say, oh, I'm presenting on, you know, December 10th. I was like, and I'll say, oh, when does the conference need your material? Oh, tomorrow. Like,
right.
Okay, great.
That's a key. I agree with you on the widescreen. I find myself every day educating the audience or my clients on what a widescreen is. But also talking with the AV of if it's a conference, the AV people or internal AV people as well. I recently ran into the problem, and we've talked about SVGs in the past. The technician, the gentleman that was running the show had about 30 different computers. We had keynotes and breakouts, and he confirmed that we'd be running the newest version of PowerPoint and which build it was and everything. Except on one computer, he ran
the
Windows,
one you had,
he ran it on Windows 7. So that's when I first learned that the SVGs were not, as solid as we had hoped.
Really,
yep.
They don't.
Windows 7.
They don't play well on Windows 7.
No, at the time they did not. I don't know how that is today, but I agree with you. The point is, there's so many bases to cover, and talking with the AV team can be very, very insightful.
And generally, they are they're actually, I've found, wonderful to work with. You know, the same with printers. I sort of treat them, you know, in the same way that they're the experts at what they do. And, you know, yes, Troy, I'm sure you can say you've educated many an AV person at times on certain things, but generally I kind of put them in the position of expert and try to work with them.
Oh, yeah. Well, half our clients are the AV companies. You know, we get hired by the production companies to come in and handle it, and then we end up working with the end client. But so, yeah, we have a little bit different scenario, and we've kind of gradually moved to being more of a, on the presentation side, the technical director for our own work. You know, here's a lot of the information, you know, aspect ratio, resolution, presets for switching, number of sources, things like that. You know, and Sandy, I'm thinking about this, I'd looked at your form before, and I've had this thought in the past. So it's not as much, your form is all the design and rationale questions.
Right.
I've kind of been tempted to put together just a preset checklist make it even available on our site for everybody to go through ahead of time with all those
technology, right?
Technology, yeah. You know, there's questions you don't think of. They're not the design ones. You know, what is the aspect ratio? What software? So we kind of do it with a couple of clients they have a standing order. They're just repeat clients, and they have a standing order form, and it covers a lot of that just to make sure we're in sync, because their executives speak all over the world. So they, you know, they checkbox it really quickly. But I'm thinking that may not be a bad idea, because I don't know, it might turn off some clients, like, oh my gosh, these guys are way too technical and I want somebody that designs. Like, well, no, we need that information so we know what we're designing too, so it all fits together.
I don't know. Just to clarify what you're talking about on my blueprint, I talk about the target audience. I talk about, I ask questions around the tone of the presentation. What's their level of awareness? You know, where are they now with what your objectives are? Where do you want them to be? You know, what's the outcome of the presentation? So, yes.
Hey, Sandy, do you go through, because I'm looking at the sheet, do you go through that on the phone with them and fill it out together? Or do you send it and have them send it back?
Depending. Sometimes I will send it in advance and I'll say, we'll be discussing this. Oftentimes it's just an informal, I'll interview them on the phone and complete it, handwrite it on my own. Rarely have to, in the old days when I worked in advertising, we shared that with the client and they had to sign off on it before we started a project. I'm not that hard on them at this point, but I do try to go through and address the majority of those points.
I like it a lot.
I like that approach. Yeah. See, that's where I'm kind of struggling with, is how do you get it out there so it becomes not a negative thing?
Right. Mostly internal, I would say. It's for me moving forward.
Okay, next point is, where are we going? How about timeline? Okay. How about just the overall project timeline?
Sure. What do you got, Troy? You deal with some pretty extended one.
I generally find... Here's my personal thinking. So I find people are ambitious with their requests, and I find that we're often playing the role of outlining what would be practical. And it's not that we wouldn't like to get a project done in a week and a half for an entire product rollout. It's just that there are a lot of things to happen between request and end result. So generally, it's not the designer side that causes the delays. You know, we're not generally the problem. Now, it does take time to do work, but a lot of times it's the things like the approvals, the content gathering, you know, everything that needs to happen on the internal client side. So, you know, I got a really great example of this, and this is, this is real reality. We had a contract, and even after talking it through, the contract listed the project would be done in 12 weeks. Now, they had actually shot for 6 weeks originally. It was for a very large, very detailed corporate template. My recommendation, based on who the end client was a 3 to 5 month project, which I kind of felt was actually an accelerated timeline for the large corporate entity. There was just so many layers of internal buy-offs, review sessions, milestones, and they were making milestones like every third day. I was like, this is just not a reality. The chance of getting a group of, I believe it was 9 people that had to sign off, and they were in different offices, to get those many people together within every 3 days was just looking to me not practical. So we did sign a contract. I did agree to it. I said, I will sign 12 weeks into this, you know, statement of work. It took 2 weeks just to get the contract and the statement of work approved after we'd agreed to the 12 weeks. So now we're signing something for 12 weeks and we're already 2 weeks into that 12 weeks. Mm-hmm. Then it took 3 weeks to just get us the detailed needs list so we could actually start formulating what it was they need. Cause you know, it was like, hey, we need a corporate template and this, that, you know, we had to actually, you know, we were almost 6 weeks into it before we could actually start the design phase. And then we actually developed this, what we call an options document. This one was fairly extensive. It was probably a 30 to 40 page document with things like, I mean, it was taking information from their style guide, from their existing presentations that we had gathered and were able to look at. Even things like logo placement on the slides, because, hey, you've got multiple branding logos. Which logo style do you want? Do you want the stack? Do you want the horizontal? Do you want the one color? Do you want the full color? So we have this 30 to 40 page document that we come up with all the questions that we need to ask. And then 3 months later, we heard back and got all, I mean, we talked to them. It wasn't. But after 3 months, we actually had all the confirmed design directions so we could get started. And they were fine with the whole project. But yet I'm still working on a client that had a very ambitious request because they viewed things not as a problem. And they said, we'll get this done in 12 weeks. We'd like to get it done 6 weeks. I'd like to get it done 6 weeks, too. And it's an awesome template. It is very, very full featured, but there was so many layers of information to work out. So clients are ambitious with requests. We sometimes play reality on timeline discussions. That was a long story. Sorry.
No, it's a great story.
No, I mean, clients are generally over ambitious. You know, that's that whole, we have to get started right away is why we have rush rates and accept credit card billing. But yeah, in that, not to make this about contracts, but that moment or that beginning of a project is when you have the control over them to, I mean, sometimes it takes weeks or, God, sometimes even longer to get that contract signed. And if you're already in the project, you have no leverage to get that all signed. So right up front, that's when we say, you know, if you want us to start on the design right away, you can get the contract sent to us and signed.
So do you request, I call it a talk track, it could be a talk outline. Do you request that type of a script, maybe asking them if they already have a script?
It depends. I mean, I always can work with content in multiple ways sometimes. Generally, I will help people, if they haven't sort of outlined it, I will help them outline it, either in a Word document and in a three-column sort of outline where they start thinking about slide by slide. You know, some clients who speak at conferences prefer just to write prose. They'll write their whole speech prose, mm-hmm. which is fine. And then I'll look at that and start
prose, like
that into
lyrics and poetry prose.
No, that would be the opposite. No, just yeah. So, you know, we can work at it. Or, you know, I'll say, hey, if it's already just in PowerPoint and, you know, whatever shape it is, just show it to me. And
you know, I don't mind getting old PowerPoint presentations. It gives me insight into how they've been thinking. Mm-hmm. It may be multiple presentations, but I take a look at how they've been thinking, and it gives me the opportunity to come back and say, I think we can tell the story better by rearranging this. So, yes, I would love to get a full written script that helps open my mind, but I'm perfectly comfortable getting presentations.
Yeah,
content in them.
I don't. Oh, it depends. Some clients, I do more of that hand holding content, you know, massaging, writing,
sure.
And I always say, look, that's going to take more time. It's going to be more costly rather than if you know exactly what you want to say already. Then we'll design on a slide by slide basis or content. But if that's another red flag. If they really, you know, when they say, oh yeah, I've outlined the presentation and they send it to me and it simply says, you know, slides 3 through 5, here's where we'll talk about research. I'll
right.
say, yeah, that's not an outline. those are notes to yourself. I have nothing to start with.
Okay. So going on that, my favorite project is what we're working on now. It's fully scripted. There is a script writer involved. We're getting a document that breaks it down by, we do line item numbers. So everything can be modified without, you know, so we can track where things go. I mean, that's obviously that's the ideal. I know some designers would just freeze up, like, I have a bunch of words, but, you know, we do a lot of that. We do lots and lots of that. We receive a script. We develop a presentation to coordinate the script. We digitally cue the script. We send it back to the client so they can look at it or their script writer. My second favorite is kind of where I think you were going, Sandy, is receiving slides and a Word outline. So now I've got a whole bunch of their thoughts. Maybe it's old slides for, or not old. I should say it's pulled slides existing from other content. Yeah. So you can kind of see the bigger story, but you also kind of see a little bit of how they're used to doing it. But then a Word outline, or it could be an email or something that just kind of says, here's the big picture, not quite as vague as what you're going with, Nolan, there. But that's probably my second favorite. And then my third, and there is a wide range of this that kind of, you know, they range from really bad dreams to things that work out. You know, just receiving slides. You know, they could be just really, it could be good or bad that way. And that's the way most people do work.
Yeah. In my agency days, I worked with writers a lot and some really good writers. And that was a dream to have of a partner there. We don't always have the luxury these days of that.
Exactly. You know, I'm working with a writer right now. It was great. He did all the, he's very industry aware for this particular industry. He not only outlined all the executive presentations, but he put in the left column where I put all the visuals. He put all of his notes based on, you know, here's what I think you'd want to put in here. Put this, here's what they're talking about. It was like he was literally doing a lot of the initial work for me. So it was, you know, that is a writer that is worth their pay just because they literally save their pre-production budget, you know, 15, 20, 40 hours because he took his industry experience. And, you know, sometimes you get that, sometimes you don't.
In the agency model, or in my experience, the copywriter does write that, and in collaboration, before we start any solid design on the slides, in collaboration, they'll make those recommendations, that get approval from the client of the script first with suggested graphics. I love that. Mm-hmm. I love that. I miss it a lot. So what about other things that you might ask? Fonts, we've talked about this over and over again, but what kind of font discussion do you have with your clients?
I feel like a rabbi when I'm approached by somebody that when they want
this is
gonna custom
be good.
Fonts.
I'm waiting.
So, when somebody approaches a rabbi and they want to convert to Judaism, traditionally the rabbi is supposed to deny them three times and send them away because you have to really, 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 really want it.
So
that's what I say. If they really, really, really want to use custom fonts, okay, then we'll deal with it later. But we'll do it. We'll do it if you want. But generally, 95% of the time, I talk them out of it.
Okay, so I can't go there. Okay, like the example project I was talking about where we did this options document, we had at least three pages on fonts. One was detailing their corporate font, which was a custom font. One was showing Microsoft standard font options that we could use in place. And there was there was at least a third page that just detailed those pros and cons of using a custom versus standard font. So custom fonts, it depends on how the presentation is going to be used. But for the most part, if the presentation is going to be distributed or handed off, I'm really not recommending it at this point. There are so many dilemmas that are created.
And those are most of my situations where you sometimes often have control over the hardware and the presentation and the software.
Right,
so
right.
You can do it in that.
That's those pre-project questions to make sure you know what you're doing.
So like Nolan, 95% of the time I'm able to explain and convince my clients why they don't want to use a custom font, why they need to stick with the Microsoft standard font. What I'm finding, I'm curious to know if you two are finding this too. More and more, however, our clients are being wiser and their graphics guidelines will propose alternative Microsoft safe fonts for PowerPoint presentations.
I've seen that for a long time. Although you can almost feel the snark sometimes, like our corporate font is Gotham and whatever. And for Microsoft, just use Arial. It's kind of like,
I had a really interesting one recently that their alternate font was a Google web font because they said you can, you know, basically if you need to install it for print or presentation, download it here. If you're online, it's, you know, just reference it. And they, you know, gave the way to reference it. I thought that was a pretty smart way to do it. So it was a little bit more than what I'll call a standard font, but it was an easy enough workaround.
I see a lot of people moving towards that. Open Sans, which is, I believe, is a Google font, is being used a lot. And it's certainly better because it's free and everything, and it is downloadable. That said, we all know how easy it is for certain people in the world to actually download a font and get it to work.
Yeah. Well,
and especially in some corporate environments. So
I could talk about fonts too.
However, the substitution for Open Sans is usually Arial, which usually doesn't mess things up all that much. So
that's where it becomes a problem. Yeah. Okay. What about visual styling? Let's just kind of move more into that design phase. The things we really want to get to, you know, things to coordinate with and likes and dislikes and, we got to get those questions in there.
We always ask for a brand style guide and the big question is, do we have to follow it? Sometimes they want you to intentionally not follow it. And we also ask for likes and dislikes. And this can be, I always say, you know, it's okay if your CEO hates green without an explanation. Like, that's fine. Just tell me that and we'll avoid it. Like, you don't have to have an explanation for everything. Also, you know, especially with new clients, you know, the existing clients who know your style trust you, which is nice. But new clients, sometimes I'll say, you know, what style are you going for? And, you know, can you show me presentations that you like or dislike, or even non-presentations? You know, I'll say, you know, is there advertising or websites that you really like? Especially if I get the sense that they're very particular. So if they show me a Nike website, and they say, I really like this. And then we can have that discussion. Okay, what do you like about it? You like that it's all dark and large moody type? And right. Or, I mean, do you like the great use of imagery? And, you know, that will help on the discussion.
You said it. I mean, I don't have much to add there. I follow the same process. Troy, how about you?
I'm still stuck with the executive that doesn't like green. Were you in on my meetings 2 weeks ago? Actually, it's a true story.
It just happens.
Oh, no, it does happen. No, I just did one where we're designing these amazing, so this is a very Hollywood-esque, I'll just say very large production meeting. You know, there's no templating to follow. There's some, you know, general guidelines. And one of the backgrounds one of my designers created, I signed off. I'm like, that looks fantastic. And I get this little over my shoulder request like, hey, are you really going to use that? Are you going to present that as one of the background options? I'm like, well, yeah. It's like, it's green. So this is where my mind went, like, oh, yeah. I mean, I had to kind of think. I'm like, which company I'm with? Oh, my gosh.
They don't like
creative director bans green from any of their I'm like, oh, you're right. So we actually did a color shift. It's really great. But I did work with a CEO, ironically, and I didn't have to actually directly interface this. Our team did. I believe this was Lori. The CEO just banned yellow. And I think it was more on the technical side when he came in, projection wasn't set up, and the yellows were looking tinted or brownish. Mm-hmm. And just said, no yellow, get rid of it all. And that threw everybody into a tizzy. Now, here's the problem. The company logo has yellow in it. Get those requests.
Okay, I ran into the exact same thing. I have a client, they rebranded blue and yellow. Those are the big colors. So we started designing and we used yellow a lot. And they said, don't use yellow. I said, why? Is it? Well, we print on site a lot of the stuff and yellow doesn't print right for us. I'm like, okay, great. So we're using it as an accent. We're not using it significantly.
Okay, so on to the real, the question I actually propose or topic on the visual styling. I first look at notes to see if we've identified the stakeholders in the presentation or the template or the project and make sure they have the approval authorities. I want to know if somebody has a bias against green or yellow or something, are they one of the stakeholders? Like, does their opinion count? I'm going to try and get a group conference call with all the different approval people, not only to hear their ideas, but I want them to hear each other's ideas. Because how many times do you have it where, you know, one executive has a different opinion than the internal creative director? We're stuck in the middle.
Yeah. So, I mean, but I ask for one point of contact.
Well, the one point of contact is great until the lead executive says that's not going to work. Then your point of contact has to change there. I try and get everybody together to get at least a consensus of understanding and hearing. You know, with template projects, we almost always make the first round a concepting round, and we provide three unique examples to get additional kind of, I'll call it real world feedback on likes and dislikes. And I actually do have an easy time of that because we send a template project out, we fan it out to our design team, and we make a little bit of a contest. Hey, who's going to get picked on this one? You know, everybody come up with a unique design. Here's the parameters. And they're very quick, rudimentary, you know, they're not functional. They're concepts. Initial conversation doesn't always relate to the reality. So I'm trying to get that reality quick.
And it doesn't always relate to what the contract is. So yeah, the we always ask for a single point of contact. But we've all been in situations where our contact says, well, my boss likes, X and, his boss likes Y and somebody else likes Z. So, that's the feedback. All right. So what do we do? Well, we leave it up to you.
Yeah. You're the designer.
You're the designer. We trust you. Okay. Well, if you trust me, you take what I gave you,
right,
which is fine not to, but what do we do?
Okay. How about on the preferences of animations and transitions? Do you get that out of the way up front? And again, it's going to depend on the type of project. If it's print, obviously.
Right. No animation. No,
okay, hold on. We did a print project where the person wanted to see the animations because they were cool. They don't matter.
That's a pop-up book.
Yeah.
I'm dealing with a lot of books right now in my house that are animated. They're called pop-up books and little
That's
Pat
cute.
The Bunny. I don't do a whole lot of animation, but I will ask, if we're, how they like to reveal information.
That's a good way. I like that phrase.
Yeah, because, if they're bullet points, and we always like to change bullet points to something else on the slide, but still, if they're chunks of information, we always ask, does the presenter just like to speak to everything, or do they like to bring things on one at a time? Some presenters, I just did something where, I was told, oh, the CEO hates clicking. Like, the fewer clicks, the better, because he feels like he's going to get lost, and... So, no animation. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
Done.
I've run into that too, but usually I don't bring it up in that part of the interview process, the project development process. Mm-hmm. It's good. I look for phrases like jazz it up, which in my mind usually means they want animated bullet points. But so far I've been successful. I usually will when I'm going through the creative, draft one, we review draft one together, and I will make a recommendation for an animation saying, now, of course, I don't recommend animation for animation's sake. In this particular instance, I think we need animation to support the concept. So I do it more as I develop the presentation. But you're right. Some people, I've run into CEOs who will say, then take that out. That's the worst case, I guess.
It's easier to remove than add on the fly when you're doing a live executive rehearsal. But I'm trying to get that out of the way.
Yep.
Sandy, any topics you've got?
Well, I'd like to talk about IT constraints or distribution constraints. What do you run into from a technology standpoint?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you're talking about file transferring and sending files back, if that's the question, then I just like to bury my head in the sand and wait till I get very angry when it's Friday, it's at 8 o'clock and they can't send a 1 megabyte attachment without me logging into their secure corporate site and getting a background check and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I guess that's the kind of question I really should ask up front a little more, because I do run into it more and more. They're like, we can't use Dropbox. Okay,
right.
Well, here's WeTransfer. It's free. We can't use that.
Right.
Okay, well, here's Hightail. No, we can't use that. Okay, it's like, well, I can accept up to, 20 meg attachments. Okay, but I can't send anything more than 1 meg. Okay, so how do you propose me getting this file?
I recently I work with a large health insurer, and for years, my contacts all had special inbox sizes. And I was recently appointed a new contact, and he had none of those. So it was I had to break up a presentation. I couldn't believe it. I did that in 1997.
So it's a little, I understand security. I really do. But it's a little shocking to see corporate America not be able to transfer large files.
It's easier than it used to be. We just have to know to ask the question.
I think that they all can transfer, but every IT department has what they've decided is their preference. And I truly believe it's personal preference. For file transfer, which I think is a definite IT constraint scenario that you got to bring up because you never know, I first ask if their company has an option or a preferred option. Because if it's a new client, maybe they have something in, we use this, or we use Dropbox, or we use Google Docs, or whatever it is, Or then I say, we can set up a secure project transfer option for you, you know, if you can use this. I've gone as far as, well, I should say we have in place, we have a test document that sits in a Dropbox link, a Box link, a Hightail link, a Google Docs link, a WeTransfer link, and a OneDrive link. We just send them an email. Tell us which of these you can get this. It's just a photo. Tell us which one of these you can access to get the photo. Because, I mean, have you seen this where an IT, the company's IT, they're always changing. You know, network security is a big problem. It's a big deal. But they're also changing their options, sometimes without notice. Because we had a client where we were using... So what were we using? We were using Hightail for the longest time. And suddenly in the middle of a project, I mean, new project started and we sent the proof that was the first one that was oversized. Hey, I can't access that link. Get a hold of the ID department. Oh, yeah, we've blocked that from our users. It's got too many, you know, whatevers that go against our policies. So we sometimes just send out this email. Hey, just tell us which one of these you can access. Yeah. This will just make it easy. You tell me rather than us go back and forth.
Right.
Yeah, sometimes they do have sort of internal Box accounts or whatever that they don't understand outsiders can't access without getting an account or logging in or putting it in the right place. So, yeah, sometimes you want to get those conversations up front and do even do a test before it gets to crunch time.
You know, I probably said this before, but on the business side, this whole file transfer thing has cost us a lot of money each year. Because we used to just set up an FTP account for every client and be done. It was on our servers. We did this. You know, it took a lot of, you know, it was a lot of hoops to go through to connect to an FTP. But hey, it was good and it was cheap and, you know, it was good. But now we pay for, let's say we pay for the Google Pro account. We pay for the Hightail Pro account, the Box account. You know, we pay for all these. So we have them all available. I mean, it's, you know, about $1,000 a year. We got to pay for all these things.
Mm-hmm. Hope you're getting miles on that recurring credit card.
You better have a miles card.
Oh, yeah. Got a couple of them.
All right. What about estimates and contracts? I know we've done a whole podcast on contract. We did. Wait, did we? Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah, we talked about contracts.
Yes.
You know, so, you know, we've talked about some of this, but for me, new clients get a 50% upfront fee payment before we start work. So sometimes that means credit cards.
You know, I don't have a contract for all of my clients. Sometimes the estimate and timeline come in the form of an email. So depending on the client, the turnaround, all of that depends on how formal I am with the contract.
Okay.
Yeah. And I don't always work on a contract either. Sometimes it's a verbal thing or an email. I it's funny. I generally, what I always threaten people with is if we're not going to work hourly, if they really want a project rate, that kind of has to be a contract.
Yeah, you're right.
That's definite. I go back to the very first question about timeline. You know, that helps me tailor the discussion about the contract and deposit to kind of fit reality. Because like you're saying, Nolan, is you need this turned around in a couple of days, but I've never worked with you, so I need at least our base contract and a deposit received. I can't wait for a check to arrive, so I'm going to have to take a credit card. I'm going to take a little hit on the option there. You know, I would say that generally, we always get a deposit for new clients. Existing clients, they're almost all of them are good to go. Just call up, great, we're going to bill you at the end. But if we're getting a deposit, 50% of the estimate, there are maybe a few things hindering that. You know, the ability to keep up with all the paperwork internally is a problem. You know, we just have more projects coming in than I have time to write them up, and, you know, sometimes I'm working on fixing that. We're coming up with plans. But if, you know, for right now, we're going to look at how trustworthy is the person we're talking to or their company. What's the size of the project we're undertaking? And have we, you know, can we just go with it? Let's just get it done. I don't really have time to deal with this whole thing. So that's probably not a great business solution. So everybody listening, don't take that advice. But I will say, you know, we've been in business for quite a while. And I can only think of two, maybe three no pays for any project where we didn't get paid, and maybe two more that we got a deposit, but we didn't get the end balance or the full amount. And that's in, you know, over 20 years of being in business. So again, the industry, it's a pretty good industry to work in, because you're really talking to, I find it to be not a huge problem.
Yeah.
Okay, let's wrap up. And to wrap up, let's ask this question, because I haven't thought through this one myself. What are any like red flags or green proceed items that we look at during this whole pre-project phase? We're gathering all this information. Is there anything that just kind of completely makes us go, okay, we should probably not go with this one, or let's move forward with this? For me, as example, I would say, is it a repeat client that we obviously have good relationships with? That's going to be, sure, we'll take it on. Can we fit it into the schedule? Do we have a designer to or design team available? Can that person we're talking to be the point of contact and approve things? If not, I really need to talk to that person first to go forward. So that could be a red flag if I don't have that. And you know, the big conversation is, we give an estimate. Do they try and undercut the project estimate? Because there is a difference between clarifying an estimate to fit a budget and somebody belittling the value of the work and trying to get what they feel is the better price point. So, I mean, those are both, some of those are good, some of those are bad. Those will be upfront questions.
Yeah, I mentioned mine before, but my big red flag is anytime a client keeps saying how much they want a good presentation and keeps stressing that.
Yes.
Everything I do is good. So
everything you do is good.
That means they may not be able to be satisfied regardless have unreasonable expectations.
I think both of your red flags are great. I agree with them. I have a new one, and this year was more obvious, or it happened more often than in the past. And that's when I get a call from a summer intern. Sometimes it's hard to figure that out, but what it is, their boss has sent them out to find, we need a new presentation. And an intern is out there. Oftentimes they go to the MVP, so I'm sure we're getting the same requests. We need a new presentation. Do you make good presentations? You know, that type of thing. So it's unfortunate, but a college student is typically stuck with price shopping, and that's what it comes down to. And that's why I mentioned my rates pretty early in the process.
Well, thank you, Nolan and Sandy, for letting us share some of the behind-the-scenes details on the business side of presentation design. As designers know, there's a lot of advanced information and details that we just really need to know and confirm before the real thing that we love to do, design, actually starts. Hey, thank you for joining us for another conversation from Inside the Design Studio about the business of presentation design, and we look forward to, well, getting together in a couple of weeks. Thanks.
So let's talk about pro tips. I don't have anything in particular to talk about this week, but I would love to hear what you two have.
Well, you know, I got one, and it's not one I'm going to have a link to. I should do a blog post. That's what I'll do. I'll get a blog post up.
But okay.
PowerPoint, you know, this could have been under news a couple of weeks ago or a month ago. PowerPoint has added a new setting. So it's not, I guess it's a feature. And I'm going to open it up right now just so I can do it. It's called the ease of access, and it's a new tab. When you go under PowerPoint options, there's a new option in there. It's called ease of access tab. And some of the things were available on the Windows side, but now they've been folded into PowerPoint and they supersede the Windows side, which is where it kind of got me. So if you go to options, you go to file options, and then there's an ease of access. I pretty much just say turn off everything in that tab. It'll stop the annoying audio sounds that you've suddenly been getting. And Outlook has this as well. They've separated this, Outlook always had the little chimes, mm-hmm. You know, hey, give me a little ding when there's a new email coming in. There's that one. And now there's this new one under ease of access. So you can actually turn on the chimes two different ways. I'll just say, anyways, in PowerPoint, I just turned them all off. If you're putting in images now and you get the little meta tag overlay at the bottom, you don't want that, this is where you turn it off. If you want a feedback sound for, I don't know, all kinds of things happening, this is where you turn it on or off. So anyways, that's my tech tip. Maybe it's a pro tip, is that these little things can become annoying, in my opinion. And while they're very, very important to a certain audience, I don't think turning them on for everybody is the best default. So I'm just turning them off for now.
I agree. I think I used mine in Outlook for about 10 minutes one day. That was all I could tolerate. And in PowerPoint, I honestly don't mind the metadata on the photos. I get a kick out of reading.
It's like entertainment?
Yes, how they're described.
Well, my tip is a new podcast that's on the scene called Data Talks with the host is Ashutosh Nadeshwar. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. And I'm the guest on the first episode. It's a new podcast on data and technology. And I talk about visual storytelling on the first episode. So we'll put a link in the show notes for that. You can get it on iTunes and go subscribe to that. And hopefully you're subscribed to us. And did we mention if you haven't left a review for us yet, please leave a review.
All right. Well, this is Troy from TLC Creative Services, the design studio team focused on presentation design. If you're looking for presentation messaging and design or show site graphics ops with, you know, support of trained graphic designers, check us out at tlccreative.com, thepowerpointblog.com, or Facebook.com/TLC Creative.
This is Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative. Check out my blog, presentyourstory.com. For lots of stuff, free downloads. If your organization is looking for training, you can find out more about that. Get in contact with me through my website, nolanhamescreative.com.
And this is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Whiz. You can visit my website at presentationwhiz.biz, my blog at pptwhizblog, or find me at the guild at presentationguild.org.
For episode show notes, links, and more from this episode, visit us at our website, www.thepresentationpodcast.com. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services, Inc. You can contact us with episode suggestions, questions for our hosts, or comments through our website. Subscribe at the iTunes Store or at our website for additional options. If you like the podcast, rate us on iTunes. Stars and reviews are greatly appreciated. Look for new episodes the first and third Tuesday of each month.